You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome everybody to Locked On Lakers. I am your host, Harrison Fagan, and today I am joined by not Anthony. He is not going to be on the podcast today. Turns out I'm not the only one that needs to take a day off, apparently, but I'm not going to give him too much crap about that, even though he always does the same thing to me. Okay, I probably will a little bit, but joining me instead of Anthony is Pete Zayas of Forum Blue and Gold and Laker Film Room. How's it going, Pete?
Playoffs, baby, 8 seed.
Just for context on Pete's reaction, we are recording this right after the Lakers just beat the Mavericks for their fourth straight win. It is their longest win streak of the season. The team is, they are streaking like they are Frank the Tank out of old school right now. And it's been pretty incredible to watch. Real quick, before we get into too much of mine and Pete's conversation, I want to remind you guys, you can find the show on iTunes, Panoply, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, all those places where you can normally find our podcast. Make sure that you're, like, you know, if you're recommending it, you're telling your friends that you can find them in all of those places. And so, yeah, just let's get right into it, Pete. What do you think of the rumors that you're ducking Anthony? Because this is your second straight appearance where he has not come on.
You know, last time Anthony ducked me. So I like to think of it in those, like, prison terms. Like, I'm not in jail with you, you're in jail with me. So that's my response.
That's true. Actually, no, I phrased that poorly. That was my bad. Honestly, like, he's ducking you because you're here and he's not here. He's off sight unseen somewhere. I'm assuming just lounging around, feeling great, probably enjoying a day with Dr. Jen or something.
That's my presumption as well.
Yeah. So also kind of enjoying a little bit of a vacation is Magic Johnson right now. That was kind of a minor thing during the game. I'm kind of, to be frank, I'm like a little surprised that people were freaking out about Magic being in Hawaii midseason, like as if they assumed that Magic Johnson was making day-to-day decisions about the Lakers and that wasn't Rob Pelinka's job. But like the Lakers front office and Magic Johnson's silence on Luke Walton in the face of LeVar Ball's criticism has been a little bit of a topic lately. And today it kind of jumped back up, like right as the game against the Mavericks was starting, Jeannie Buss tweeted out that she basically tweeted out a vote of confidence for Luke Walton. She posted a picture of him and Rob Pelinka and herself grabbing dinner, and then said that they were planning to get barbecue in Memphis, I believe, and then just said, like, hashtag in Luke we trust, which is the second time she has used that hashtag. I love that that is a thing that we on the beat are keeping track of now. But Pete, since you're here and, you know, you're a coach, and I'm just kidding. But no, I mean, you look at the game in a very X's and O's, like, granular way, and I thought that if you were here and we didn't talk about this, we would be doing, like, our listeners a major disservice. And, you know, we're a year and a half into Luke Walton. LeVar Ball has been outspoken in his criticism of Luke, but I'm curious for your thoughts on him just now that we've had, you know, about a season and a half of experience as Luke Walton, head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. Just kind of, what do you think of what you've seen so far?
I think Luke is a solid enough coach. I think that, you know, the more that I learn from covering the team, the more sympathetic I become to him, because I think there are a lot of forces at play, both above him and below him, that are difficult to manage. And I think he's done, you know, I want to say about as good of a job as I could have expected. Like, I'm not through the moon, you know, thrilled with him. In a big, I mean, now that's easier to say on a 4-game winning streak, right? But I don't think that basically getting rid of Luke Walton doesn't really solve any problems in the organization. That's really what it comes down to for me, is above him, you have a rookie president of basketball operations and a rookie general manager that have made some missteps along the way in terms of the narrative. And to some extent, the roster, right? There's not a lot of shooting on the roster, and there are holes on this roster. And honestly, they didn't have a roster where they could have fixed everything in one offseason. But things like the Paul George tampering, the telling anyone who will listen that they'll pursue two max guys, which anyone with a calculator can figure out that means that most of this roster is gone next year. Things like that end up putting unnecessary pressures on Luke. Now, that doesn't mean that they shouldn't go after two max guys or anything like that, but openly advertising it in the manner that they have, you know, the only guy to really pull off this two max plan is Pat Riley, and that isn't how he handled it in the 2009-2010 season.
To the contrary, they were like very under the radar about it. Everybody was talking about the Knicks, the Nets, like a million teams before they were talking about the Heat for LeBron.
Yeah, and you know, people are going to be able to see how much cap space the Lakers have or could create and then speculate based on that. But I think that the front office has done a poor job of fueling that fire, and that puts pressures on Luke from below, from the player level, right? Where guys, they had a team meeting where they say, hey, you know, we want to clear the air, and guys complain about how the organization goes about its business. And then Luke's, you know, giving Randall kind of peculiar run of playing 8 minutes one night, 11 the other night, and 29 the next night, you know. And I don't think Luke handled all of that perfectly, but I see improvement from the young guys, which really these couple of years that he's been here, it's all about that. Like, can we get these guys to the point where when they're in their mid-20s, they're able to be big-time contributors on a championship contender? And I've been happy. Brandon Ingram's gotten so much better. Lonzo's progressed in the short time that Luke's had him. Kuzma's been a revelation. Even Julius has gotten better. You know, so all in all, in the ways that it's important, I've been okay with Luke.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about this here in a second. Okay, so your answer, and it was good. It gave like a lot of insight. You've been on the beat this year. That's valuable stuff. And then you watch all of these games. But it sounds like you're a little bit more enamored. Is it fair to say that you're a little bit more enamored with Luke, the relationship manager and the team builder, more so than the X's and O's? Because I there was kind of like a glaring, you did not talk about the sets that Luke runs, or like, and when you talked about his rotations, it was the Julius Randle getting yanked around type of thing.
Yeah, no, that's fair to say. I don't think the Lakers run, now it's a huge improvement over Byron Scott. Their spacing principles are fairly good. But I think that his biggest contribution has been in a player development sense, in terms of you can draw something up on paper, but if your players don't know how to run the play and don't know the counters on the play, then it really doesn't matter that much. So I think in plain English, I think the Lakers run kind of league average, maybe below league average sets, that their young players are starting to understand how to run those sets more and more effectively. And I think in the long run, that's more and more important. I'd love for them to have like a real X's and O's guru or two on the staff, and I don't think that they have that. But, you know, all in all, I'm the more important part of the equation, which is players learning how to make reads, I am seeing progress in that.
Yeah, and the other thing that you did mention, and I didn't want this to come off like I was trying to get you to crap on Luke, is that like the building and the getting players to play hard for him, I think that's like what I've taken away most from this season, and the way that the defensive improvements that this team has made, I think, have been huge, and you can't understate that, because that's kind of getting that buy-in is almost the hardest thing for an NBA head coach. And then once that flips, it's kind of over. It doesn't matter how smart you are. If the players aren't buying into your message, then you're just kind of done. And I think that Luke continuing, even despite all of this cap space stuff, to keep the team, you know, there was that 9-game losing streak, but outside of that, it seemed like he's kept them playing pretty hard and pretty bought in.
I think that coming back from the 9-game winning streak to regain that buy-in is the most impressive thing that Luke has done, because over the course of that streak, it wasn't, you know, they're losing games but they're playing hard and the other team has a closer that they don't have, or they're just more talented, right? And because the Lakers had a lot of those losses at the beginning part of the year that were like, okay, you know, they lost this game, but it was an acceptable effort. The effort level had really dropped off of a cliff. And I think Lonzo coming back, I think Lonzo has a lot to do with it, but not everything to do with it. I think that what Lonzo coming back did was flip the momentum back. And so then other things start happening that are unrelated to Lonzo, but kind of there's positive momentum going. And so other things start working out. I think Kuzma has had a bit of a, you know, come to Jesus moment about his defense, and I'm seeing improved defense from him. And but Luke's ability to, it's one thing at the beginning of training camp when your record's 0-0 and it's a bunch of young guys like, yeah, we're gonna be, you know, we're gonna play so hard, we're gonna work, you know, on defense, we're gonna rotate, we're gonna crash the boards. Then when you lose that, especially for a fairly extended stretch, to be able to get that back is really impressive.
Yeah, and it wasn't even just that, like, the schedule did get harder, and they were without Lonzo, and they were without Lopez. But, and that's the type of thing that if you don't watch really the games, you can kind of just say, oh, well, they were without those guys. Of course they lost. But it was a totally different team than the one that started the season. It just, in the effort level, they were just getting pounded. Like, they had some of those close losses earlier in the year, like you mentioned, that were like moral victories. It's a young team that doesn't know how to win yet. But during that streak, there was a 6-game stretch where they lost, a 6 or 7 part a game stretch of it, where they lost by double digits every single time, and they were just getting destroyed on defense, and there was very little effort, I think, a lot of the time. And normally I'm not the type of person to criticize that, but the players were out there in the press criticizing each other's effort, and for them to flip that, and then as soon, like, Lonzo came back and they lost that first game with him back, I believe, but then since then they've been completely bought back in on defense. They've actually climbed back up to like 11th in efficiency as of when I last checked. And I mean, that's the type of thing that when you see them go with the suicide lineup of, you know, Tyler Ennis and Corey Brewer and whoever else that closed the third quarter against the Mavs, as your girlfriend so aptly pointed out, you know, that's the kind of thing that you kind of have to, I mean, you don't have to do anything. I'm not going to tell you what to do. But for me, I kind of overlook it a little bit. These are the growing pains of a young coach, or this is him trying to keep everybody bought in by giving them minutes, even if it doesn't seem like the smartest kind of decision in a vacuum at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is something that Luke has done well, to keep everyone engaged and to get them back on board. That said, I do think there are roster issues. Like, if I can fill in for Anthony in any way in spirit, Tyler Ennis cannot be playing minutes for this team going forward. He is not an NBA caliber backup point guard. I understand that Caruso is not a great alternative. I would rather see him in, because I think he's a better defender, if nothing else, and he will at least kind of run the motion principles that Luke wants to run and get to the right spots. Or if Magic is in Hawaii, I hope he's scouting a point guard right now.
This is the point that we've gotten to. I looked at the University of Hawaii men's basketball schedule, and the only team that they had played like recently was Utah Valley, who I can confirm from watching them play Cal State Fullerton is not the answer to the Lakers' problems. And I don't think that Hawaii necessarily is either. So I don't know that he's out there scouting a point guard playing in college, unfortunately.
Yeah, man. Well, they need somebody to take those minutes. Now, it's interesting because I'll ask Luke about this, but earlier in the year they had Clarkson as a point guard, and I'm making quotey fingers as I say that, where they put him in a position where he'd make a simple entry pass and then run off of screens the way that a shooting guard would. So it was kind of this lineup where you didn't really have a point guard, but the biggest difference is that Julius Randle was on the bench, and you can run offense through Randle, where guys are coming off of screens, and Randle can get tunnel vision, he can be turnover prone, but if you give him the ball in a half court set at the elbow or at the top of the key, he can find guys coming off of screens. That is one of the strengths of his passing game. So without Randle, maybe Luke doesn't feel comfortable doing that with JC, but like, I'd rather have Corey Brewer on the court, not playing point guard, but pushing guys a position down, Clarkson to the, you know, to the one and Hart to the two, then have Ennis out there, because he's like, they're just hemorrhaging when he's out on the court.
Yeah, he's been, I don't think it can be really, I've said understated a couple times on this podcast, I'm realizing now, but yeah, he's one of, I said this when the Lakers acquired him last year after he started out kind of strong, when they first brought him on, like the first two games, he was like, he made a couple good decisions, he wasn't great, but he was fine, and then for the most part, down the stretch of that season, he was like the worst NBA player I've ever watched, and I did not understand why he was their primary choice to bring back this summer, even though, I mean, they went after Rondo, they went after Rose, they whiffed on those guys, but you would think that there would have been somebody out there they could have gotten that was better than Ennis.
At the very least, they need somebody who can defend, and I think you can find guys like that in the G League. I'm struggling to find what it is that Tyler Ennis does well to justify his position.
Do we you know, his agent isn't Rich Paul, right? I think we've confirmed that.
We have confirmed that his agent is not Rich Paul, therefore any unexplainable phenomenon are still remain unexplainable.
Yeah, I mean, because if your agent's Rich Paul, you can get away from it with anything. But that's enough trashing Ennis. I want to get into some other stuff really quickly after we take another quick break. Okay, so we have completed our ethering of Tyler Ennis, and we've talked about Luke Walton. But during that discussion, we talked a little bit about this this defensive turnaround that the Lakers have made. And I'm just kind of curious for your perspective on that. Like, is it just them trying harder again, or is there some type of change that you've seen that you think has led to the team playing better defense after that 9-game losing streak?
That's a really good question. What the team has been talking about, Luke and the players have referenced this, and my plan is when they get back in town, I'm going to ask Luke to kind of explain this. I believe I know what he means, but I think it'd be good for the fans to hear. They were talking about how their shell has become looser, and what that means is if you ever played high school ball or have been around, you know, organized basketball, one of the, you know, most fundamental drills that you'll run is a shell drill, where if the ball's in this spot defensively, this is where I am. And there are principles based off of that. And you generally want a tighter shell, meaning that the guys on the weak side are... So one of the rules is, and I don't know if this is Luke's principles, but this is a conventional rule that maybe fans would understand, is say you split the court in four different quadrants. And if the ball is in the furthest quadrant, meaning like near the sideline, there shouldn't be anybody on the weak side that is too much further than the middle of the basket. Kind of the idea of being like halfway between their man and halfway between the ball. On the NBA level, maybe it's not quite that far. Maybe it's the lane line, because those guys can make really strong skip passes and you've got good shooters. But the idea is that if the ball does get skipped, you have time to close out to those shooters over there. Yeah. What was happening is guys on the weak side were staying hugged up on their man. And so when a roll man went down the lane, you've got that responsibility to tag the roll man, and you are late because you started out too close to your man.
That's something that you and I talked a lot about with Ingram a couple weeks ago at one of their games during that streak.
Absolutely. And that is part of the reason why. So that's an element of it. Also, having Lonzo back, the Lakers are able to play more effectively with that Kuzma-Nance lineup, who are both undersized for their positions at the 4 and 5 and can get kind of pushed around, because both Lonzo and Josh Hart will sandwich down on the defensive glass. And so you'll see a lot of plays where the ball's kind of getting batted around a little bit down there, and where during that losing streak, those were offensive rebounds and putbacks. And so part of that's the effort level in that. There are also those structural things where, again, the shell is getting loose and then guys are dropping down onto the defensive boards in ways they weren't during the losing streak.
Yeah, I think that's like I've also noticed like I think the team as a whole really has started to just kind of gang rebound better over these last couple games. And I don't know if that's some type of like improved that's some type of not improved, but like increased emphasis on telling these guys to get down there and rebound. But I've noticed Ingram seemingly down there on the boards a lot more. Like all of these guys are really crashing the glass on defense and trying to make sure that they're ending these possessions. And I think that that's probably been a big part of it, at least in my eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, Ingram's been very good on their end, on the offensive end of the court as well. But yeah, if you want to play small like that, you need all five to be grabbing rebounds, because then you can't run if you're not getting those defensive rebounds.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about Ingram a little bit, because last year I think you were known as his, I believe this is accurate, like chief hater and rooting for him to fail. And this season, this season he's been quite a bit better, and to say that he's better than one of the worst players in the NBA, which he was for large stretches of last year, is kind of like that's not a big thing to say, but he's been a lot better, at least in my eyes, at a lot of things. Where are you at with Ingram now? Has your opinion on his ceiling started to change as this year has went on? He got injured today. We'll see if he ends up playing Monday in Memphis, but aside from that, like what are your thoughts on Ingram's year?
So I don't know if people will believe me in saying this or not. I have said it in the past, but I've always thought that Ingram has a high ceiling. It's his floor that always concerned me. You can see, you know, he's a guy with a 7'3", 7'4 wingspan that's coordinated, that can handle the ball. And there are very few people on planet Earth that fit that description. So his ceiling was always extraordinarily high as a result of that. My concern is that his skill level was so low when he came into the league, and he doesn't have the best kind of natural instincts, that my concern is that, you know, there was a long path for him to travel to get to the ceiling or close to it. Most guys don't hit their absolute ceiling, and that's not a failure. It's just, that's why you call it a ceiling, right? The absolute best that a guy exactly. can be. So I have seen it. I am more excited about these last 4 or 5 games than I've been about the previous improvements. I think that for much of the year, they've given him the ball and made him an on-ball player and played him really high minutes and given him a lot of touches and a lot of shots. And that ends up making the, you know, that ends up making the points per game look really good, right? And it makes your assist total go up because you have the ball all of the time.
Yeah.
If you look at numbers like RPM or BPM or any analytic that you want to think of, it still thinks fairly lowly of Ingram. And that said, these last 4 games have been the most excited I've ever been about him. He's driving and kicking. He is crashing down on the boards, as you said. He is making the proper pass shot reads. He's still getting back cut a little too much for my taste on the defensive end, but he has been a real positive impact player over these last 4 games, especially. He hurt his ankle in the Dallas game, so he was on track to have a great game in that one as well.
Yeah, he had like 5 assists in the first quarter.
Yeah,
I think.
He's making, and his true shooting percentage has skyrocketed over these last few games. He's getting spot up attempts where he's catching and shooting the ball in one fluid motion and knocking him down at a high clip. He's cutting off of the ball. Since Lonzo's return, they've diversified Ingram's role in a way that I think suits his talents more than the way they were using him prior to then. And I think both him and the team have benefited from that. And I think and hope that they use, like, this is the first time I felt Ingram's on the right path. And I know that other people have been, including yourself, have been really pleased with how the season has gone for him prior to this. He's gotten better. Like, there's no bones about that. And that was true prior to these 4 games. But this little stretch is, for me, this is the template. And I think that this is the first time I'm like, hey, he's on track to being a very good player.
And do you think that that change is just Lonzo coming back? Or do you think that maybe that's something that they wanted to do earlier that they just couldn't because Lonzo was out and they needed him to handle the ball more?
No, I think it's more Ingram's credit than anybody else. I think that he's probably had, you know, guys in his ear, and he's alluded to this as well, about, you know, making shot pass type reads about, hey, this is your driving, these are your driving kick opportunities, rather than shooting this, you know, 10 footer that's contested. Or remember, there was a stretch where they played Philly in New York and he got a shot blocked like 11 or 12 times in those two games. Like, that's not even an exaggeration. A lot of those were, hey, you drew the second defender, now pass the ball to the open guy and then good things will happen. So, for example, the last full game that he played, he only had 3 assists, but he got a couple of hockey assists, got a couple of plays where he created an open shot, but the guy just didn't make it. And to me, that's sign of, yeah, the coaches are in his ear, but the game's probably starting to slow down for him. And he's able to be like, oh, hey, I've seen this a couple hundred times now, this exact circumstance that I'm in. And instead of me taking the shot, this pass to the weak side wing is actually the right play on this. And all of that thought is happening in a split second, right? And to where it's becoming second nature. And so to me, the credit goes to Ingram and nobody else, definitely not Lonzo.
And I think that the thing that you mentioned about him getting his shot blocked, that probably was a hard lesson for him to learn, because at every level previous to this, it was just enough for him to have long arms, and just he was going to be able to get his shot off at the rim no matter what. Maybe he wasn't always going to make it, but he that probably takes some time to get used to that, hey, like, there are guys at this level that can block me consistently if I am not careful about when I go up for these.
That's the irony about high-level draft picks that are usually blessed with some physical gifts that guys in their that you pick in the 20s or the second round, they actually the top guys generally know how to play basketball less than the guys that are taken in the 20s and after that, because, as you said, they're able to kind of get away with things at the lower levels of basketball that it's not a problem, so why would they change? Julius Randle's another great example of this. And you see kind of the devil on his left shoulder and the angel on his other on his right battling with each other sometimes in Julius Randle's case, where he will drive and try to overwhelm somebody physically. And sometimes it works out, right? But there are other times where it's a turnover or he gets stripped or something like that. And that's something that those really physically talented players, like a guy like Ingram, in many ways, they don't really know how to play basketball yet, and they have to learn that in their first couple of years because they can't get away with those things anymore.
No, it's the same reason that we see like 5 to 10 athletic, really quick point guards with no jump shot come into the draft every single year. And people just always say like, well, when he figures out the shot, because they've never had to figure out their shot before. Like it was just not something that was necessary. They could just blow by guys.
That's perfect analogy. Yeah.
And a guy that does not fit that description, but that the Lakers took highly anyway, is Lonzo Ball, who I think it's fair to say could not just get away with being quicker than everybody at lower levels. But although I saw an interesting stat the other day that he's been like the third quickest player with the ball in his hands in the league this year, which is actually kind of surprising to me, and I'm not sure that I believe it, but I saw that analytic floating around. But Lonzo's come back now. I think the easy thing has been a lot of people have credited him for this 4-game streak. I mean, he does deserve some credit for it, but I mean, what have you seen since he came back, and like, what do you think is the next step for Lonzo this season? What's the one, if you could see one thing from him the rest of the year, what would it be? Like one step forward.
My first instinct is the stuff, the finishing around the basket and all of the technique stuff that comes with that.
Thank you for not just saying jump shot and like taking the easy way out of that question.
Well, you know, I mean, I do want to see consistency in his jump shot. And yeah. I do think that by and large, the sample is big enough now. There's been like a 15-game stretch where he's shot the ball pretty well. And it's to the point where he's taking so many attempts that, you know, like, we're talking over 90 shots. That's a decent sample. And, you know, there are times where against Dallas, I saw his lower body, you know, kind of get out of whack a little bit, and he was not as locked in as he had been in previous games. But that happens to every shooter, right? Yeah. That is not unusual. It's almost like a golf swing where, you know, getting everything in sync is not something where once you've accomplished that, it's like, well, I'm done with that. I don't have to, you know, it's always a work in progress, and something can go out of whack any moment.
Yeah, it's like unless you're Ray Allen, there are always going to be random hitches, I think, that pop up. And even he probably had some. He just, in general, always looked perfect.
One of my favorite things to tell shooters when I was a coach anyway, was actually
you're still our coach,
really. I feel more of a dad, but you know,
yeah, coach dad, we'll go with that.
Okay. But one thing I would always tell shooters that I coached is Ray Allen in game 2 of the 2010 NBA finals broke the NBA finals record for the most threes made in a finals game. And then the very next game he went 0-for-14. That's Ray Allen, right? That is the nature of shooting. So that one game, like, it has to be a decent stretch for me to start worrying about a guy. Now, with Lonzo, what I want to see progressing, and I don't know if it's going to happen this year. I think it would be difficult to see this in-season improvement. I think it's more next summer. But the finishing around the basket and the techniques that are involved with that, putting your guy in jail, you know, using hesitation and inside-out dribbles. Now, that's one thing. Hezzies and inside-out dribbles are things that he can do this year. You know, using his shoulder to initiate contact. That pull-up jumper was open a few times, you know, when bigs are dropping and not picking him up. I'd like to see him take that shot and start to take that with confidence. Those are probably the biggest things, that pull-up jumper and inside-out dribbles.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the putting guys in jail. I'm actually, now that you mention it, we really haven't seen him do that a whole lot this year, which is something that you'd really think could be a weapon for him, given his length and like how he would be able, much further back he would be able to keep guys from blocking his shots and things like that.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. That's part of why you had me on earlier in the year, and I was still so bullish on Lonzo despite his shooting struggles, is his cup is nearly empty in terms of skill set, similar to Ingram last year, right? Where
his skill is basically he knows the right passes to make and he can make them quickly, and that's about where his skills end, right? I mean, that's oversimplifying, but those are his main NBA skills right now.
Well, he's brilliant and he plays with pace and he can shoot the ball, but the technique stuff, he sets his guy up for the screen well, but after that, how do I come off of it? How do I get my feet right to raise up for the jumper? How do I, keep a guy locked behind me when he's giving me back pressure? When I see that big and he's not hedging well, how do I kind of jump into him and finish with my left or right hand around the basket in order to, take advantage of the fact that he didn't hedge properly? All those things like that he doesn't really know how to do yet, which is unusual even for a guy his age. You watch Dennis Smith Jr., he knows how to do most of those things. You watch even a De'Aaron Fox, who knows how to do most of those things. So Lonzo is already really good and doesn't know how to do some pretty basic things.
Yeah, so I think that's probably – I mean, you make a solid point. Like, that's why – I think it's almost foolish, like the tizzy that we work ourselves into about rookies a lot of the time, where we're evaluating every single game of theirs in season. It's like they're basically raw clay at this point. And yeah, I mean, occasionally you're going to see the outlines of what they're going to become, but we aren't really going to see whether or not they're good until their second or third year, if even then.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And if you don't have and this is what I always tried to say within my Ingram hating, quote unquote, is that, like, don't draft a guy like that if you don't want to have the patience to work through it, right? Like, don't draft 19-year-olds.
Yeah, and from listening to your work, I think it's fair to say one of your chief frustrations with all of the Julius Randle rumors this year, that like we had to wait for all of that clay to kind of mold into focus, and we're seeing like the statue that it could be at this point. And then right as that's happening, the Lakers are publicly basically saying he's going to be gone. Like, they haven't said that, but they've said that with like, by not the way that they aren't extending him, by the way that they've yanked his minutes around, by the way that they're talking about getting two max free agents. At this point, with all of this stuff kind of going around, we're about halfway into the season. We're near the trade deadline. If you were if you're putting on your GM cap instead of your coach's cap, like, should the Lakers be like really trying to move Julius Randle at this point? Or would you want the Lakers to really try and move Julius Randle, since it seems like they aren't going to keep him this summer anyway?
I'm not entirely convinced they're not going to keep him.
Okay.
I think that there's, and Ramona Shelburne alluded to this recently, there are definitely versions of the future that don't have Julius Randle in them, but by strength of the fact that he's a restricted free agent and you have a fairly limited marketplace, this has been a media room conversation I've been having with people over the last couple of weeks. It's been really interesting to hear different people's opinions on what is Julius Randle's market value, because Randle is not going to be motivated to sign for a 4-year, $8.5 million per year deal. Right now, he's worth more than that, most definitely. But the question is, who's going to pay him that? You don't have too many teams with cap space this summer. And are they going to be like, 4 years, $80 million, Julius Randle, that's the guy I want? And so the Lakers they did this with Lamar Odom one summer too, and they got him on a really friendly deal that was like $9 million a year, when he was definitely worth more than that because it was a buyer's market.
He ended up taking less than, I believe it was, the Heat offered him, and the Heat would have screwed up their LeBron and like the Bosch pursuit had they done that.
Right. And so I think the Lakers are playing the market a bit with Randle. And now there may be scenarios where they get two max guys and there's just no way to make the math work to keep Julius, and that means he's got to go. I also don't think Laker fans are going to be complaining too vociferously if that's the reason that Julius Randle is gone.
No, right? If it's because they have LeBron and Paul George or whoever like the tag team is, as long as it's not KCP and Brooke Lopez re-signed at the max, I think Laker fans are going to be pretty happy.
Yeah, I don't think it's determined either way, and I think the fact that they've got the restricted control over him. Now, the one risk in that is that Julius might go the Greg Monroe route and be like, you know what, I'm going to lose a little bit of money on the front end, but I'm going to take the qualifying offer, which is 1 year and, gosh, I don't know, it's like
it's
not a ton, right? And so he loses money and he loses, you know, what happens if he gets hurt type of thing, but he's also betting on himself in that the next year Part of what – there aren't many teams with money right now. And then with restricted guys, teams know that I'm going to have to really overpay this guy in order to get him. Or otherwise the team's just going to match the contract offer. Lakers may be in a slightly different circumstance with their max free agent pursuit, but they'll have enough time to know whether or not those max guys are coming, most likely, to be able to determine Randle off of that. So that probably shrinks Randle's market even more. Teams that go, I don't really want to do the restricted game. We're going to have to overpay a guy, and that's not a good use of resources. Randle might go, well, fine, I'm going to take, if all I've got on the table is a $9 million per year offer, $10 million per year offer, I'm going to take this 1 year, five-ish million. Don't quote me on that. I don't know what his QO is. And then that next summer in 2019, I'm unrestricted. And there's probably more teams with money. So the marketplace is better for Julius then.
Those things are all true. I do wonder, though, if there will be less appetite for that, given the way that that's worked out for Nerlens Noel this year.
Yep. And that's the risk, right? That's the risk that they take. Even a guy like KCP, right, where he turned down, 4 years, $70 million? Something like that.
Yeah, from something like that.
He ain't getting 4 years, $70 million this year.
No.
And he's actually played well, but recently, in the last couple of games. Let me very much clarify.
Yeah, four games during the winning streak, KCP's been good. Before that, yeah.
Yeah. So that's the thing is that the Lakers still control Julius Randle's future. Regardless of what happens, if the Lakers want Julius Randle on the team next year, he'll be on the team next year. And so I don't think they're going to be motivated to make a move right now. The only exception I would say is that if either DeMarcus Cousins or Paul George become available at the trade deadline, that's the scenario in which I think that Randle could be moved, but I don't think either of those guys are going to be available.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And that's why I think I think you make some good points about kind of like why the screaming over Randle on the internet, as with most screaming on the internet, is kind of a little bit overdramatic at times. And like the Lakers very much could still keep him if they wanted to. And so we'll move on from that. And the last thing that I wanted to talk with you about was just we'll end on like a lighter note. Like the Lakers, they still have about half the season to play. They're kind of riding high right now on this 4-game winning streak going into this game tonight against Memphis, I believe on Monday. And like, what do you think are reasonable expectations? I asked you this kind of about Lonzo, but just for the whole team, what are reasonable expectations for the Lakers for the rest of the year? This can be record. This can be like types of play things you want to see from them. Just like what has to happen the rest of the season for you to end the year and just be like, you know what? I'm pretty happy with how that season went.
I feel like they're on the right track. And now that answer would have been different maybe 10 days ago, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But I have seen, and I tweeted this during the Dallas game, I have seen an uptick in like the passing ability of the team, especially from the younger players. And that plays into what I was talking about having guys that can make reads off of the maybe average or below average sets that the Lakers run, but being able to run them well. I'm seeing progress in that. So I just want to see them continue down that path. Stay locked in on the defensive end. I think we saw during that losing streak that is the absolute lifeblood of this team, and that they are not good enough on offense to survive even, you know, brief lapses over a couple of games. They cannot outscore teams.
No, they're not even close to good enough on offense to do that.
Right. So the ability to stay locked in throughout February, March, they're, you know, when they fall out of the playoff race, and I know I'll get mentions about that, like, no, they're gonna get the AC, and I kind of cracked on that at the beginning, right? But
yeah.
Hey, wouldn't that be amazing, right, to at least make a run at it? I just don't see it as realistic in terms of record. I since the beginning of the year, it's interesting because when I zoom out, this year has gone very along the lines of what I thought it would. It just in the details hasn't gone the way I thought it would. So you talked about how tough their December schedule was. Well, they played really well against Golden State a couple times and Houston a couple times.
Yep.
Cleveland, like the games where it was like, oh, here's the murderer's row, it was like, okay, you know, it was like they got a win or two here or there. They won in Philly, they won in Houston, competitive in all of them. And then the games, and then after that, it's like, oh, hey, we got the stretch against Memphis and the Clippers at home, like, hey, they should win some of these games. It's like, oh my god, Charlotte, they look awful at home in these games. What is going on? And then I thought things would get easier starting mid-January or so, and the Lakers would have a chance to get on a little run. My hope for the second 41 games of this year has always been 20 and 21. Can they go close to 500? And that's a high-end expectation. I understand that if I was setting a betting line on it, I'd probably put it at 15 wins, maybe 16. Because their schedule is not that hard from here on out. And so, yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. So 20 wins in the second half of the year puts them, I think, at 34 wins on the season. That's something that is a high-end expectation. If you can get between 31 and 34, I'll be happy.
But, yeah, hey, I didn't ask for, like, what's the realistic expectation. I said what would make you happy. And so, like, I think that, I mean, hey, like, that's optimistic, I think. But
it is.
There's a chance they could get there if they continue to play defense like this and they get like a couple breaks going their way and they stay relatively healthy. Like, I don't think that that's completely just out of the ballpark of possibility for that to happen.
I also think that they're going to benefit from, they're going to be a team that is still motivated to win in a part of the season that's when true. Other teams are not. They're going to be teams that are tanking. They're going to be teams toward the end that are resting starters because they're playoff seed is locked into position, and the Lakers more than anything have always needed to go into the 2018 offseason feeling good about themselves and with a good image to the rest of the league, to where a couple of max guys or one max guy and maybe another, you know, couple of good players go, you know what, I'm going to join them and it's going to be a lot of fun and I'm going to be happy that I joined that team because we're going to be winning and I'll be in LA, all of the stuff that we hope are selling points for the Lakers.
Yeah, that's and they also, like, on a lesser note, need to win enough games so that Boston doesn't end up with their lottery pick.
For sure, right? Like, it'd be ideal if the Sixers are picking 11th or 12th, you know, in this draft, and that would make everything sting a lot less. And the way the standings are, too, is a lot of teams are closely bunched together to where getting from the second worst record, which is where they bottomed out, to the 10th worst record, it's very not very much of a climb to get there. So just having good, positive momentum going into the offseason was always the most important thing next to the player development. That's the most important thing is the young guys being on track. And I've been happy on that front. So now they just got to close this season out on a strong note where they feel good about themselves. And I think they're in business in 2018.
Yeah, and I think that those two things are not unrelated, right? Like, if the young guys are developing as they should be and they're showing the types of signs that you want to see from them, then you're going to win a couple more games.
For sure.
Yeah, so I think that'll wrap it up for this. That's like a good light note to end things on for this episode of Locked On Lakers. Pete, thank you so, or I guess I should say Coach Dad, thank you so much for coming on the show today and taking some time for me out of your Saturday. People, you can follow him at Laker Film Room on Twitter. Pete, what should people, this is going to drop Monday morning. Is there anything people should keep an eye out for around then?
So I'm going to have a Josh Hart video out this week, and I've said that for the last couple of weeks, but this is going to be the week where I have the Hart video out. I'm working on a couple videos. One going to be called Lonzo and the Little Things, where I do, and now this might be, I'm going to do about 10 games of looking for all of the little plays that he makes that may or may not show up in the box score, where that affect winning games. So that's going to be a fun one that I've been working on.
Also would be a great name for a band, for those of you looking for like a name for your hipster band. Lonzo and the Little Things, I think that's like pretty solid.
Yeah, yeah. So those are the two main ones I'm working on right now. Along with, as long as the games are entertaining, I'll do a recap. When they look like garbage and get waxed by 20, I'm like, I'm not covering this crap. So, yeah, so I'm grinding, doing this full time now, and putting all the time I can into it.
With the amount of hours that it takes you to do a video, I can't blame you for not wanting to recap the 20-point losses. I think that that would be enough to drive even the most dedicated basketball fanatic insane.
Yeah, man. Like, my attitude is like, if I don't want to make it, you don't want to watch it most instances. So that's worked out pretty well for me.
No, I mean, who wants to watch? Like, I mean, honestly, at the end of the season, maybe you could do like a compilation of like, here's like the 2,000 times the Lakers got backdoor cut. But like, you know,
for sure.
If you were doing that for 9 games straight, I think it would be a little bit wearing. But I'm actually, based on what you've told me, I'm not going to spoil anything, but I'm excited for the Hart one. And yeah, I'm looking. I always look forward to reading your work and or not reading your work, watching your work. Thank you for and thanks again for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. And I've got an Ingram driving video that I've been working on for a couple months, working on getting quotes. So I don't want to leave that out. I want to make sure that I've documented his really impressive progress over this recent stretch.
All right. Well, so you heard it here first. Pete hates Kuzma because that's the only young player that he doesn't have a video coming out on. So, yeah.